the difference between being a trusted advisor and a service provider.
A trusted advisor is someone who you are confiding in, who is providing you with advice, be it medical, be it legal, be it financial, who you are really trusting and making important life decisions. A service provider might be a dry cleaning service. I don't think that that's really the same kind of decision making versus how you choose your dentist or your attorney.
How a woman in a ninja pose made a blender a huge success.
It was a very male oriented type product. It was masculine looking. We needed to soften it to some degree, so we put a powerful woman on the box in a ninja pose, and we came up with the tagline, "Rule the Kitchen."
How to connect with your customers and make your product more interesting when you're selling outlet covers.
We have orders that come in from Amazon every day, loads and loads of orders. We put brochures in there, and it's word of mouth. They pass them on, and then we get orders from their friends. It's basically sort of a guerrilla campaign at this point.
This is the language of business. We are here to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. Here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. Last episode was all about the logo and the brand. Today, we put it all together, capturing the attention and money of your customer. How do you choose your dentist? Location, scope of services, referral, or your insurance plan? With so many choices, how do you distinguish among them? This is a project marketing strategist Wendy Carr loves sinking her teeth into. Wendy, welcome to the Language of Business.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you so much for having me.
How did you get Chestnut Dental as your client?
Well, like all my clients, Chestnut Dental was referred to me. But Chestnut Dental is a little bit unique in that I'm really privileged to know them both as a patient as well as their trusted advisor with all their dental professionals. Both my children go there, and they were patients before we even started working together.
And what services do you provide for them?
I work with them to coordinate all of their many community outreach programs and educational programs and awareness programs for dental health.
Are there people on their staff that specialize in the community outreach?
Yes, that is myself and the person who is the community outreach coordinator and marketing coordinator. And we really work together. I'm training him and mentoring him and giving him vision and guidance and working with the doctors as well to make sure that we're getting the most out of all the different programs that we participate in.
Tell me about your specific community outreach programs.
They have some partnerships in the community with some organizations such as the local YMCA, in which they work with them and they provide education about dental health and preventive care for sports injuries. You want to wear a mouth guard and other kinds of information, which is really helpful for the public to know.
Who is Priscilla the Tooth?
Priscilla the Tooth. Priscilla is one of our dental assistants, and she really lights up when you put the costume on her. She visits many community events and fairs and nursery and preschools.
Getting them to think in terms of their marketing hat, was that a major change for them?
We're really not thinking in terms of marketing. We're really thinking in terms of community awareness and education. So it's a little bit more about just letting people know about who they are and what they have to offer versus marketing. So we don't do a lot of traditional types of marketing.
How do you feel you've changed your clients' practice from their perspective?
I provide them a resource, guidance and vision, and helping them so that they can really focus on their patients, and I can be a resource for them to help them implementing whatever programs they want to participate in to benefit the community.
And how do you structure your contract for services? Is it monthly, weekly?
It's usually hourly. That's actually best for all of my clients because they hire me on a long-term basis and sometimes on a project basis for specific needs. But what I always do is I partner with my clients. They may hire me because they think they need XYZ, but then we evaluate what their needs are, what their objectives are, what they're trying to do, and sometimes it winds up being something different.
In terms of your other clients, what trends are you seeing these days?
People looking to be thought leaders. And I think that's really important because my clients are really more professional service providers. They're doctors, they're attorneys, they're financial advisors and accountants. So I really work more with the type of person who we would call the trusted advisors. And they don't do the same kind of marketing that everyone else might do. Because the type of decision making that clients need to make or patients need to make is a little bit different. Trusted advisors are really reliant on referrals, not only from other professionals in their industry, but from their clients or patients. So their reputation is very important. The quality of service is very important. But most important is their expertise.
What's the difference between that and a service provider?
A trusted advisor is someone who you are confiding in, who is providing you with advice, be it medical, be it legal, be it financial, who you are really trusting and making important life decisions based on their advice and working with them. A service provider might be a dry cleaning service. It, you know, of course it's important, and I'm not trying to put dry cleaners down because they really do, they are important and we all use them.
Right.
However, I don't think that that's really the same kind of decision making, how you choose your dry cleaner versus how you choose your dentist or your attorney.
What would you say is one consistently good trend that you're seeing amongst all of your clients and one bad trend?
I think that one of the good trends is that people are really sharing more with social media and all the other types of communication really on the internet. One of the things that they like to do is they like to educate, and it really gives them an opportunity to do that. So I see that as much more of an awareness builder, and I see that as a great opportunity across the board, not just for Chestnut Dental, but for many of my other clients as well, and across the board in the industry.
And how about one thing that you want to beat your client over the head about saying, don't do this?
Sometimes it's that same exact thing. It's the social media, and it's really hard because you either love it or you hate it. And everyone wants information online, and they want to get lots of free advice, and that's really tough. And it's also a big time drain. So it's a fine line to walk, because you want them to be the one who's communicating on their own behalf, because that's really the most genuine, and you really get the best information. However, that's also really difficult because it's very time consuming, and it also requires, when you're talking about medical questions or you're talking about legal questions or accounting questions, those answers are really very specific to the individual, and it's really hard to do that.
And so, you can't market through the clients of an attorney or through the patients of a dentist.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So those are unique challenges that we face when you're trying to market, and it's really not even marketing. It's really building awareness and spreading the word.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Greg.
Wendy Carr, Principal of Carr Marketing Strategy.
Coming up, making sure your customers aren't shocked when you're selling outlet covers. But first, the packaging of a men's deodorant that didn't work, and how a woman in a ninja pose made a blender a huge success. Next on The Language of Business. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. Art Lifting helps small businesses and Fortune 500 companies uplift their offices while supporting their communities. Art Lifting's collection has over 1,300 original artworks in various styles and prices, available for purchase or rental rotation. Plus, custom-tailored and co-branded merchandise for corporate gifting and events. How does Art Lifting support communities? All of Art Lifting art is created by artists living with homelessness or disabilities from all across the USA. To learn more and view the collection, go to artlifting.com. Once again, here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. Are your insights truly valuable to others? How about your problem-solving abilities? George O'Shea certainly thinks so. He's been working with some of the world's top brands for well over a decade. George, welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you. Very pleased to be here. Appreciate that.
Why is your marketing counsel valuable to others?
A lot of people, they don't look at past experience and draw on outside resources to try to get fresh set of eyes on a problem. We provide fresh set of eyes and many years of experience to try to bring to take care of a problem that they may have.
As an independent marketing consultant, what needles are you trying to move? Revenue, margin, profit, something else?
Depends on the problem. Some people are trying to build a brand. In that case, the revenue is not really the key driver. Getting the name out there, getting the product onto the shelf is the key piece. The revenue ideally comes behind it. A lot of times it's people that are trying to tweak a product. In that case, it's definitely revenue. They want to enhance that top line. Ideally, if they tweak the product, it's going to, you know, impact their bottom line as well. But it depends on who the customer is and who the client is that they're trying to take care of.
Tell us about some of your biggest successes and some of your biggest oopses.
Well, it's a lot of oopses. You learn from past mistakes. There was a company that we worked with when I was just starting out, Menin Company, that Colgate owns.
Sure.
And they came out with a deodorant called Real Deodorant, which was a squeeze top. It wasn't well designed. It was very phallic, and frankly, it was terrible. It was a terrible launch, and it was a classic CPG mistake. And that was fun, actually, to watch how a product was placed, how we got it onto the shelf, and we told them what we thought the problems might be. And frankly, we didn't need a lot of research in that case to find out we were right. It didn't make it. Successes, the one that comes to mind is the Ninja. It was a brilliant idea by the people at EuroPro, skilled marketers, really entrepreneurial, very driven, with an ability to get product on in front of the consumers on TV. They got behind products, and they had a quad blade food processor, which was big on the shelf. It was not a good product, and it wasn't successful. It was one of the few products they launched that wasn't successful. And they thought they had something. It was a top mount motor. It was a really sharp cutting mechanism. And we went in to meet with them, and we streamlined the vessel. We kept the top mount motor on it and decided that the blade was a really powerful blade. And we launched it as a different product. We named it, we gave it an identity, we gave it a personality, and we embraced the polarizing piece that was inside the product, which was a sharp blade. We made it the hero of the product, and we called it Ninja.
How did you come up with Ninja?
We assembled a team inside of a breakout room inside of Proteus, my old colleagues. And Charlie Kahn, who was a brilliant branding guy, was the guy that generated a bunch of different ideas on a storyboard. And we all started to participate in a brainstorming session. And we got to the point where the piece that we were touching, the blade itself, was unique. It was like a dagger. I mean, it was a large, sharp element. It was polarizing. And we decided that to really make a story sing, we needed to make that the hero. We named it Ninja just based on the fact that the ninja can perform any task with a sharp element, and generally the outcome is to their favor. It was a very male-oriented type product. It was masculine looking. We needed to soften it to some degree, so we put a powerful woman on the box in a ninja pose, and we came up with the tagline, "Rule the Kitchen." And the intent is that whoever's ever using the product itself, they can make any type of a product that they want. The cutting element, the blade, the polarizing feature, it became the hero. And Ninja stuck. It was named, you know, that day inside of an office with a group of people and supported by the people at EuroPro who thought it was a great idea. And they supported it on TV and drove the heck out of the product.
Are you worried that by saying rule the kitchen or making it female that you were cannibalizing part of your market?
No, because we saw the design of the product, as I said, it was masculine. It needed to be powerful. It was a powerful product. So we had some masculine edges and masculine elements, stainless steel, black. The product really popped when it was on the shelf. It was very different looking. The cutting element, the blade, the polarizing feature, it became the hero. And Ninja stuck. It was named, you know, that day inside of an office with a group of people and supported by the people at EuroPro who thought it was a great idea, and they supported it on TV and drove the heck out of the product.
Are you worried that by saying rule the kitchen or making it female that you were cannibalizing part of your market?
No, because we saw the design of the product, as I said, it was masculine. It needed to be powerful. It was a powerful product. We had some masculine edges and masculine elements to it, stainless steel, black. The product really popped when it was on the shelf. It was very different looking than a sea of white that you saw at retail. We knew that a man would be drawn to that product. The woman on the package, she was in a dominant pose, but it was a power pose. It was somebody that we thought people would gravitate towards. We didn't see it as a polarizing feature at all. We thought, if anything, it would draw on both sexes to say, this is a great idea, and this is a powerful product that male or female could use.
How many of your ideas get adopted 100% by your client and ultimately shown to the consumer versus heavily edited?
It's a tough question. Generally, what you'll see is people, they want ideas. They want fresh eyes. They want somebody to bring a different perspective. When it gets inside of a sterile building, it gets watered down. We've seen a lot of that. That part's disappointing. At EuroPro, the beauty of EuroPro was it was really two people at the top that were making most of the executive decisions, and they asked really, really detailed questions. And you could almost see the gentleman that was on TV who owned the company, his mind was always going. It was continuously surfacing ideas, and it was rapid-fire questions that he would throw at the team as we sat in front of him at a conference table. We could tell when he was interested. We could tell when he was hooked. We could tell, frankly, when he didn't buy the concept. But we never really backed down, and I think he admired us for not backing down. They were an ideal customer to work with from that perspective. Not every client is like that.
If you had to distill consumer-facing marketing down to one or two key points, what would be the it factor?
Do your homework. Most companies fail on the upfront. They're afraid to spend money on research. They're afraid to spend money on insights. They're fear to go walk a retail shelf and have somebody with good eyes take a look at that shelf and say, you can play in the following areas and this is what's going to take to play there. They want the orders. They want to pull product through, but they don't do the upfront. Perfect example is this Apple iPhone launch. The idea that a product of that caliber is bending, to a guy like me, it's inconceivable. They had to have a beta test of that product to find out there was an issue with that product. Small companies generally don't do that. Large companies always do that. The biggest mistake they make is to not spend upfront money.
Thanks, George.
Pleasure to be here. Very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
George O'Shea, product analyst, insight expert, and branding maven.
Still to come, how to connect with your customers and make your product interesting when you're selling outlet covers, next on The Language of Business. If you enjoy listening to podcasts, and I'm guessing you do because you've gotten this far into this one, let me tell you about another one I think you'll enjoy. It's called The Story Behind Her Success. If you want to get someone's attention, just tell them a great story. That's what The Story Behind Her Success with Candy O'Terry is all about. Once a week, she'll make your day and change your life by introducing you to a woman whose story is so powerful, you'll never forget it. The program host is award-winning broadcaster Candy O'Terry. She's been the Massachusetts Broadcaster Association Broadcaster of the Year and winner of 18 Gracie Allen Awards. Candy has interviewed over 800 women from every walk of life, so there's no stumbling around in this podcast. Success is so much more than the outcome. It's about the journey. It's a story of how you got there. So buckle up and go along for the ride. The Story Behind Her Success with Candy O'Terry, available wherever you get podcasts. One more time, back to Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. Are you seeing sparks fly in your office is bad enough, but in this case, it could be fatal. Al Peckham is the co-founder and manager of Gloucester, Massachusetts-based Electrolock. And Al, welcome to The Language of Business.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I see on our table that we have outlet covers. Help us to understand what residential and commercial outlet covers are.
Electrical outlet protectors or covers are actually devices that replace standard wall plates. Once installed, they allow for the attachment of protective covers, in most cases clear. And these covers prevent the plugs from being accessed by children. They prevent the plugs from being damaged behind furniture or machinery, and they also contain sparks if a plug were to short out. Exit holes come out of the side of the parts, which also allows for the plug to be retained in there if the cords are tugged on. We sell these for residential applications as a child deterrent. We also sell them extensively to commercial institutions to prevent the plugs being crushed behind the beds in elderly facilities or in child daycare centers. We also sell quite a few of these to medical labs and hospitals. In schools, they use the flat plates in hallways to prevent electrical outlets from being accessed. And we've done quite well. We've been selling them for the last 2 years, the extended line on the internet.
Al, what is the typical profile of one of your customers?
The typical profile of a residential customer, a mother who's just had a child. She's come home from the hospital, and she's looking at all the safety devices out there. When she looks at something like this, she realizes it's important to buy the best there is. And we have a small difference in our price, maybe 10% more than a competing product. But when it comes to a safety product, we think people will realize, no, they want the best. For a small amount more, it's worth it. The typical commercial customer we deal with would be a purchasing manager for an elderly daycare facility. They'll call us up and they say, we have 200 beds in our institution and we need to put something behind the beds to prevent the plugs from being damaged. What can you do for me on price? Or a hospital purchasing manager or a laboratory purchasing manager.
The focus of the segment is on consumer-facing marketing. How are these sold to the consumer?
We've sold these online through Amazon, eBay, HomeDepot.com, our own website, a number of other resellers for about 2 years now, the extended line. We've done quite well with them. We're in the process now of setting up a national manufacturer's rep network.
How do you get the attention of your customers?
We have orders that come in from Amazon every day, loads and loads of orders. We put brochures in there and it's word of mouth. They pass them on and then we get orders from their friends. It's basically a sort of a guerrilla campaign at this point.
How do you do your marketing now outside of your website at Home Depot and HomeDepot.com?
That is it. We haven't done any external marketing. We initially had advertising and marketing company, typical SEO, search engine optimization, and that sort of thing. We were listing ourselves in shopping engines and data feeds. As Home Depot picked this up and Amazon, eBay, they began introducing their own sales effort into it. And when someone would search for Electrolux, they would come up anyway. So it didn't matter if they came up to our website or where they came up, they'd already trumped us. And we really couldn't overcome that, so we didn't carry that any further. Our next steps are to put together an active campaign of social media marketing.
And how would that look? Are you going to be tweeting about your products? Are you going to be using Instagram or other vehicles?
Facebook, tweeting. We need a full-time manager to handle that operation because we're so busy. We wear so many hats right now. We just can't attend to that. We need an additional layer of management ourselves right now just to do that. And that's why we're actively looking for a strategic partner so we can bring that to bear.
Have you found it's better to go direct to the consumer or rely on a middleman like a Home Depot or an Amazon instead?
We found direct to the consumer seems to work better. It's a high-end product. It's a much better margin when we go direct.
Of course.
And the more middlemen in the channel, the more difficult it is to make money on the product, especially where we make this product in the USA and we're keeping the manufacturing here.
I love that these are manufactured locally in Massachusetts and, of course, with U.S. labor. Has that eaten into your margins?
It has somewhat, but now that is offset because if we were to manufacture these, for instance, in China, we have considerable freight costs involved in bringing these over. We'd have an additional layer of management involved to handle the logistics of that. We would also have issues with quality control, our UL listing, and we'd have to order very, very large quantities and warehouse large quantities to make it worthwhile. That would really tie up our cash. The way this is set up right now, all in-house molding and warehousing, we can literally manufacture on demand. That's a huge, huge benefit to us at our present size.
What is your single goal for the business over the next 3 to 5 years?
We'd like to extend the product line. We have a number of safety lockout devices based on the same technology where equipment is serviced and the plug needs to be locked out. However, we've addressed a larger, more important market than that of the new products, and that is the industrial safety lockout market. And these are very large 240-volt plugs that typically mount on handy boxes, on machinery, and walls. We've developed some new products, they're all patent pending, that will allow us to lock plugs against those boxes, and we're hoping to bring that to market probably within a year.
Al, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Al Peckham, the co-founder and manager of Gloucester-based Electrolux.
Thanks, Greg. We post a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. You can find us on iTunes, or Apple Podcasts as they now call it, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, or just say, Alexa, play the Language of Business podcast from MyCast.
Searching for latest episode of The Language of Business. Here it is from MyCast.
No matter how good your product is.
See, that was easy. If you could take a moment to subscribe and rate us, that would be great. Our director is Mark Mandel. Additional production by Derek Reisner. Social media by Jennifer Powell of ExcellentWriters.com. Consulting producer, Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Audio editing and voiceover by yours truly. Thanks also to Mike Carruthers of Perfect Your Podcast and SomethingYouShouldKnow.net. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.